So we are recording, which is very exciting. So we are gathered together, Chris, Cheryl, myself, and Matt, to talk about the series that we're about to start as a church, the teaching series, which is going to look a little bit different to how it usually looks, as church looks slightly different when it's gathered at the moment on a Sunday morning. We are gathering via Zoom, and therefore we will be sticking to quite short and concise and hopefully engaging ways of looking at scripture together and hearing from God together on our Sunday mornings. What we do want to do is make sure that we have a time to set the Beatitudes that we're going to be looking at and to set them in their context as part of Matthew's Gospel and as part of the Sermon on the Mount. And we want to just have a bit of a chat about how we understand them as a group of statements, how we understand what Jesus was trying to say to the people he was speaking to, and what Jesus might be trying to say to us as well through this part of his teaching. So the four of us are going to have a chat now, and anyone is listening to this, then we're inviting you to participate in this conversation by giving us some feedback, chatting with any of the four of us individually, and hopefully there'll be some ways for people to engage with this content, either in discipleship groups or individually. So as the series goes on, we'll also be hoping to provide some sort of midweek content as well, whether it takes this kind of form or whether it's signposting to some other materials or just some reflections, some questions to help people to go a bit deeper, perhaps, than we're able to do on a Sunday at the moment. So, with that in mind, we're going to just kick off by having a bit of an introductory chat. So this will be quite informal. There's going to be some interrupting of each other, possibly at points. There's going to be some umming and erring, certainly from me. But hopefully, what we'll be able to do is, set the Beatitudes in their context and have a little bit of a working out of how we understand them. So we've had a bit of a pre-chat together, just to make sure that we all are more or less on the same page, as there are different ways of approaching Jesus is saying here. So we're looking at Matthew 5 from verse 3 to verse 12. So that's the part of the Bible that we're looking at. And there's a whole load of statements that people are probably quite familiar with, but might have heard different ways of understanding. So let's start with the context. So, Chris, you had some thoughts about parallels that Matthew might be trying to set up in the understanding or the mind of the reader or the hearer at the time with Moses, possibly. So, did you want to just tell us a bit about that?
Thanks, Laurie. Yes, I think the first thing I want to say is that the Beatitudes are part of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5 to 7, probably the most important and influential speech anybody has ever given, and that's been translated into more languages, and which many people would say represents the heart of the Christian faith. And why it is so important is because Jesus's teaching is so radical and countercultural and utterly relevant to our times today. And as you say, Laura, Jesus is drawing a parallel between himself and Moses, the great lawgiver of the Old Testament, and he's drawing a contrast with the law that the Jews were given and his own teaching. Because Jesus doesn't come with a set of commands, rather, he says, this is the sort of person that I want you to be. This is the sort of person who my Father wants. And rather than giving rules and regulations, Jesus talks to us in this talk, the Sermon on the Mount, about our priorities, that we're to seek first the kingdom and his righteousness. He talks about our motives, that you've heard that it was said, don't kill someone. He says, don't even be angry. It's what's in the heart that counts, your motivation. And in the section that we're looking at attitudes, the beatitudes, the beautiful attitudes of Jesus that he wants his people to embody, to incarnate, if you like. So that's the first thing I'd want to say.
That's great. Thank you, Chris. Cheryl, could you flesh out a little bit for us who you think Jesus is speaking to in this passage?
Well, in Matthew's account, Jesus is giving this teaching in the Sermon on the Mount. And as Chris said, Jesus is setting himself up like a second Moses. And Matthew is portraying Jesus as Moses throughout his gospel, really, because the Sermon on the Mount is part of is the first of five blocks of teaching in Matthew's gospel. And Matthew has all Jesus' teaching in these five big blocks with sort of a narrative in between. It's set in the story of Jesus. And it parallels, people see it as a parallel of the five books of the law in Jewish scriptures. So Matthew himself, in the way he shaped his gospel, is actually demonstrating, Jesus is setting himself as Moses, and Matthew is setting his gospel as a sort of, as a jeweler would, to show a stone off in its best light. Matthew's putting the setting in to show Jesus' teaching within this greater context of the successor to the better Moses, if you like. So as Moses was teaching the people of Israel, Jesus is teaching his followers here. This is addressed very much to the people who had followed him. You have to be serious to follow Jesus if you're going to climb up a mountain to listen to him.
Absolutely. I wouldn't climb up a mountain for just anyone. That's great. Thank you, Cheryl. And actually, that's really interesting, isn't it? I think Matthew is often seen as the gospel writer who is most trying to communicate with the Jewish audience. And so even though we might kind of miss the relevance of some of those things, they wouldn't have been lost on the people who Jesus was speaking to and the people who would have received the gospel from Matthew. So that's helpful.
It's interesting because, you know, Jesus says, I'm not sort of doing away with the law, but fulfilling it. And there is this sense of this great fulfillment of what the Jews have always learned, but this is a greater and deeper revelation to them.
So Matt, you were saying something interesting earlier about this idea of fulfillment of the law and the idea that Jesus is kind of a representative of Israel as Moses was, and that part of what God was doing in Jesus was kind of fulfilling Israel's destiny. And you saw this whole part of Matthew's gospel as part of that. So do you want to just expand on that a little bit for us?
Yeah, sure. So I think it's because I was noticing in the bit that comes before this, we have Jesus being led by the Spirit out into the wilderness or the desert. And this makes me remember back to when Israel was led out of Egypt, kind of through the waters, like with kind of baptism, kind of through out into the desert. And Israel goes round and round and round. There's the grumbling and the mumbling and all sorts of kind of agony and angst because they don't seem to have the faith that God will lead them successfully into the promised land. But Jesus, instead of going round and round and round in the desert for 40 years, is there in the desert for 40 days, but does overcome. He does have that relationship with his Father that means that he can resist temptation and does see himself kind of come through that. So kind of while Israel goes round and round, Jesus comes through. And I think in the Beatitudes, we see something about these statements that when I read them, I think, wow, this is really fulfilled in Jesus. Jesus is the one who is poor in spirit. He mourns. He's meek. He hungers and thirsts for righteousness. He is merciful, pure in heart, a peacemaker, and is persecuted. And he is the child of God. This is his kingdom that he's bringing to the world. He does no comfort from others around him. It is his earth that he will inherit. And so in these ways, though he's obviously teaching his disciples, I think in another way, we see that Jesus is the one who most profoundly lives this out. He lives it both as an example for us, but also he lives it in a way that perhaps we might never be able to, or never could on our own, without the power of his spirit working in us.
Mm. Great. So we'll definitely talk some more about that in a moment. And that's really reminding me of something that Chris said. And I think we could bring you in here, Chris, about the fact that the Beatitudes almost sum up the character of Christ. So that's what you're saying, Matt.
Yes.
Go ahead, Chris.
I think that's absolutely right, Laura and Matt. That, Jesus said later in Matthew's gospel, he said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. That inevitably the words we say are a spiritual barometer of what we're like inside. And so that was no less true for Jesus himself. So when he gives this teaching, it's an outpouring of what's in his heart, of who he was as a person. So we could say that the Sermon on the Mount is the character of Jesus, and we can focus specifically on the Beatitudes and say that each of these attitudes that is described here is lived out in Jesus' life. And so it'd be a fascinating study to look at the different gospels and look at events in the life of Jesus to see how he exemplified each of these different Beatitudes. And I think it would be a very rewarding study.
Yeah, thank you. So this idea that the Beatitudes are a reflection of Jesus' own heart and of the kind of people perhaps that God is looking for, the kind of people who please God, the kind of people who are truly fulfilling the covenant kind of destiny of Israel. How do we understand then our response to that? So Matt, you touched on it there, that some of the characteristics and the, because Jesus is talking about motives, he's talking about inner attitudes and qualities, how do we wrestle with the kind of seeming unattainability of some of these things? Have any of you got kind of particular reflections on that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think some people have read this and felt kind of wildly optimistic, you know, oh yeah, I can do all these things. It's plunged others into the depths of despair. Am I really pure in heart? Am I really meek? Do I seek peace over kind of fractiousness and so on? And I think that that's meant that people have come at this in quite different ways as to whether they understand these as unattainable kind of standards, whether they understand these as kind of laws that are being given, whether they understand that we're already these things or that we need to try and be these things. And so people have kind of tried to wrestle with this in different ways. And I think that the way that I've kind of come to understand it is that these are things that together do describe the kind of the life of a Christian. Not necessarily that we need to kind of seek some of these things out. We don't need to go kind of seeking persecution. But if we're following in Jesus's footsteps, this may come. Jesus kind of told us to expect that. And so I think these things come out, as Chris said, of that life. That we see them coming out of who Jesus is, and they come out of the life of the Christian as well. That would be my first kind of thought. So I know others will want to come in.
Yeah, that's helpful. When we were chatting beforehand, we were reflecting on this a little bit, and I said, I wonder whether it's helpful to think about it almost like we think about the fruits of the Spirit, that in the way that Paul describes, they're not things that we can attain for ourselves, but they are things that grow out of our walk with Jesus. They grow out of relationship with Jesus. And in that case, it's the Spirit growing that fruit in us. And we are to kind of pursue and to aim for them. But there's also a recognition that to be utterly patient is, you know, only something that God can work out in us by his Spirit, and not something that we can kind of produce for ourselves. So perhaps there's a bit of a parallel there with the Beatitudes, that it might not come naturally to us to be meek, but that as we become more so, that, you know, that's something that God works out in us as we follow Jesus, and that the corresponding kind of blessings that come with that begin to show themselves in our lives. And so it's a description of the life of a disciple as we follow more closely Jesus' example.
Yeah, can I chip in there? I think I'm wanting to pick up something Chris said earlier about how countercultural some of these things are. So there's this bunch of people who are probably predominantly the ordinary people. The ones at that time, there would have been widespread poverty. A lot of people were landless. They were getting taxed by the Romans. They were having to try and pay their temple tax as well. They were hard done by. They were in an occupied country. They had military occupation with the Romans there. And Jesus is saying, everything you've learned over the years about how God rewards people, and the people are rich because God's blessed them, and therefore they're the ones that you're blessed. And Jesus is saying the opposite. Jesus is saying, actually, you're blessed if you're poor in spirit. You don't have to be wealthy or important to show that you're blessed by God. God is actually blessing things which traditionally weren't necessarily seen as blessings. And it's aspects of what some people refer to as the upside down kingdom. Jesus' kingdom, God's kingdom, has completely different parameters to the way we normally think about power and success. Jesus' kingdom is one that rewards the meek and rewards those who try to bring peace, not try to exert power through violence. So I think there's a very strong strand in this teaching, which is telling people that God's kingdom is very, very different.
I agree with you, Cheryl, there, absolutely. Just to bring out the point that the people that Jesus was speaking to lived under an oppressive military dictatorship, which had quashed and quelled rebellions and exerted a very heavy taxation burden upon the people. And the people were poor and meek and humiliated, perhaps as much as humble. But I think there's something very relevant, very contemporary about Jesus' statements today, because although Jesus is here talking to his disciples, I would say that we are seeing some of these characteristics embodied in people today as a result of what they have been experienced with the coronavirus, that we are seeing a lot of humility on the part of the NHS staff. We're seeing merciful, pure, in heart people, kind people. And although and this is something God values and God prizes, and I think that we should be affirming where we see these qualities in people and seek to emulate those around us who are being so kind and so thoughtful of others. And I'm sure that Jesus appreciates that. Because although the society is very different, 21st century from the first century, people's hearts are the same. And the difficulties that surrounded people in the time of Jesus have their parallel in what people are experiencing today, this month, around the world. And God is always at work, squeezing good from evil and bringing out the best in people wherever he can.
Yeah, that's good. And I think following on from that, that there's a bit of a tension, isn't there, between whether these are things that we should be kind of pursuing and seeking out or not. So we can say certainly for some of the statements in the Beatitudes, for some of them, that we certainly do want to seek to be pure in heart. You know, there's no sitting on the fence about that. But perhaps a few of them, mourning and being persecuted, are things that we might question whether we are being kind of instructed, if you like, to pursue these things or not. And it just reminded me there, Chris, about something I think that you were saying earlier about the kind of tension between being something and doing something, and that although the Beatitudes are descriptive of the life of a disciple, the things, the characteristics that we should be seeing in ourselves as we grow in Christ, that equally, to some extent, we are to pursue those things. And so I'll be speaking on Sunday about what it means to be poor in spirit. And although that is, to some extent, an attitude that is grown in us, it is also something that we can learn to provoke in ourselves and to nurture. And so that idea of seeing those qualities in people around us and being, you know, maybe even convicted by them, you know, being struck by seeing the character of Christ in others as described in these verses here, and thinking, well, actually, yeah, I should be and I want to be more like that, is really good. Matt, did you have something that you wanted to say about that as well?
Sure, it kind of relates a bit to that and to a kind of previous point. I think that, you know, some people reading kind of Jesus' words have been really kind of troubled by them here. Kind of his critics, if you like, would say, oh, kind of in the context of occupation, kind of being meek is to ally yourself with the occupying power. Kind of this isn't revolutionary. This is kind of sucking up to the dictators and enabling them. And so I think there have been some really strong challenges to some of the things that Jesus has said here. And I just want to pick up Cheryl and Chris's point about how kind of radical this vision is. And in some ways, the extent to which we might feel comfortable with the idea of there being kind of something positive about meekness, for example, says perhaps something about how much our culture has been shaped by the message of Jesus here. But I think in the context of kind of coronavirus, there's something about being under pressure that brings out what's in our hearts. It's like the tube of toothpaste thing. When you squeeze it, kind of what's inside comes out. There's kind of plenty of stuff around at the moment, kind of where it's about, whether it's competitive parenting how good your homeschooling is, or, are you getting everything that you need from the shops, or how are you going to get hold of this, or, the kind of the look out for yourself because no one else is going to type of thing. And this is just totally not the way that Jesus is laying out here. So I think I just wanted to kind of to pick up on that a bit, as something that I think is partly why, again, although it might feel familiar, there's something for us really to get hold of, especially now.
That's interesting. As an aside, my Ofsted report would say not brilliant. There's no competitive homeschooling going on in my house. Go ahead, Chris.
I was just thinking as you were speaking, Matt, that there are some outstanding examples in the 2nd, 3rd and 4th centuries of Christians caught up in plagues and pandemics and going the extra mile. when the powerful and the rich would escape to their villas, to their resorts, they would escape, but Christians often stayed behind and tended to the sick, and even at the expense of their own lives. But the testimony is from those societies where they did stay behind to help, that many of the people became Christians as a result. So those sort of people were just embodying the characteristics that we're thinking about here in the Beatitudes. There is a true humility and meekness and a sacrificial serving.
So that's really interesting, Chris. That I think that leads us on actually to how we understand the idea of those people being blessed. Because as you say, in that context, the consequence, if you like, of following this way of living, this upside down kingdom kind of ethic, doesn't look like blessing on the outside or in the world's view. So Cheryl, I'd love to hear what you have to say about that. I can see your hand is raised in anticipation.
I was just thinking, sort of slightly at a tangent to what you just said, that Jesus is addressing his followers. But we have to remember that whereas we are so ingrained to centuries of thinking of ourselves as individuals and everything is me and me-centered and it's even me and my salvation, the ancient world, they thought much more in groups. You were part of a family and that was your identity, was much more sort of tied up, was the family. It was the family honor that you were caught up in. Everything you did reflected on your family. And I think sometimes when we listen to Jesus' words to his disciples, who elsewhere in Matthew's gospel he says these are my brothers and sisters, about his followers, Jesus is talking about the family of God. He's talking about the kingdom of heaven. He's not talking about individuals as such, although obviously God loves us as individuals. But it is a corporate thing. This is a body thing, and is a group of people who live by this will be blessed. And it just reminded me of something I read recently in a history book where they were saying about the people who drew up the American Declaration of Independence, saying at the beginning, we count these truths to be self-evident. You know, everybody is created equal. And the historian was reflecting on the fact that there was nothing self-evident about it. They only thought it was self-evident because they were steeped in a Christian tradition. And even though they were consciously framing a constitution which was going to be independent of any particular religious strand, they were nevertheless steeped in Christian tradition, because our whole society in the West has been shaped by the teaching of Jesus.
If I could just make a separate point, the Beatitudes end on rather a sad note. They talk about persecution and people reviling you and speaking all bad things about you and so on. And I was thinking of the passage in Hebrews 11, where it talks about the heroes of faith, people who are commended before God for their faith. And yet, if you look closely at the people who are named there, a great many of them died for their faith. So that we're not guaranteed immunity from suffering and persecution, just as Jesus was, he had to go through death and crucifixion and torture for us. So these aren't promises of escaping suffering and difficulty. Jesus said, in this world, you will have trials, you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. So that's just a necessary perspective I think we need to add into the mix here.
Yeah, and I think that Cheryl was speaking earlier as well about the fact that Jesus never promises to take us out of, and God never promises to take his people out of any kind of suffering. But what he does say is that he is with us. And so I guess our understanding of the consequences, if you like, that are presented here, that each beatitude is two parts. There's these people are blessed because, and our understanding of the link with that kind of because is not a, as a consequence of, in the way that we would understand it, it's not a logical you mourn and therefore, it's more of this idea that if you are in relationship with God, whatever circumstances you find yourself in, whether that be mourning or persecution, whether you are meek and therefore are being oppressed or taken advantage of, whatever those circumstances or that situation is, that you have blessings, you are blessed by God in the way that I'm sure we could testify ourselves in our lives, that things may be going on around us that are, you know, externally not blessings, but those are the times when we realize and we come to understand our own dependence on God and can actually feel closer to him than at many other times. And yeah, there's something quite profound there, I think, about how we understand what it means to be blessed. And the primary blessing is to be in relationship with God, to be caught up in him, in his life, and to know his life at work in us and his spirit at work in us. So yeah, knowing that God has something good that he can bring out of even the worst situations is certainly something that is a recurring theme throughout the biblical narrative as well. Matt, you have got something to say.
Yeah, I think it just really follows on from that. I think when we see those words kind of blessed, or there are some slightly different translations, but we can go to our kind of mental dictionary and go, oh yeah, we know what being blessed looks like. Oh, that means this, this, and this. We might have a picture in our mind of what we think a blessed life kind of looks like, whether that's now or in the future. And actually, kind of Jesus is also reorienting in some ways, for some of us, our idea of what we think the blessed life looks like. It's not that we get to define it and that it's, oh yeah, it's being comfortable or, you know, having all of our needs met in particular ways or, you know, because often we use some of the language quite flippantly and say, oh, I feel so blessed when we inherit some money, for example.
But there's a lot of hashtags on Instagram at the moment about gardens, isn't there? Hashtag blessed.
Yeah. And so we define, you know, like either through our mental dictionary or through like experience of what we're hashtagging, kind of what we think it means to be blessed. But Jesus says, kind of the blessing that I'm giving you is the kingdom of heaven. The blessing that I can bring to you is comfort, and kind of so on. And some of those things are present. Some of those things kind of, there's some suggestion that they're in the future. But I think that, we just need to, keep in mind that it's Jesus who is shaping this. And we shouldn't just immediately jump to, oh yeah, well, I want to be blessed, so I should do these things or seek out these things, but blessed in the way that I always thought or wanted to be, in a kind of like slot machine God, you know, I'm doing the right thing, so I want to get out the blessing.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you, Matt. Yeah, there's an aspect of this that I guess we probably won't go into too much here, and it's something that we've talked about in previous kind of teaching series about the way that the kingdom is both now already and yet to come. And that's another aspect of the Beatitudes that I guess we would hope to draw out perhaps in our teaching as we go forward, that we experience the blessings of God now in our lives as we follow him. You know, many of us are experiencing peace at the moment when the world around us is not very peaceful, fearful and anxious, but these Beatitudes, this description of the kingdom and of the kind of people who live in the kingdom of God and the kind of people who experience the joy of that and the rewards of that, both now and to come, are the people who have peace that passes understanding. And that this time of reflecting on these teachings of Jesus can be really relevant and really speak into what we're experiencing around us at the moment. So yes, we have those blessings now, but we also have more to come, and we have a hope that is real and is tangible and that comes out in these passages. So I'm really looking forward to exploring more of this. We will certainly be exploring some of this in our Sunday gatherings, and hopefully we'll have some time to dig into more detail as well, whether that's with the four of us or whether that's in other ways. We're experimenting at the moment as a church and learning how we can grapple with God's word at a time when we can't gather physically all together and look at things on a screen. So instead we're looking at a different kind of screen or possibly listening to people chatting away. So we have chatted for long enough, I think. So thank you if anybody is out there and listening, and we hope that you have found this a beneficial time. And if you have questions that follow on from this, then we would love to hear from you, and we'll be very happy to do our best to answer them.